Welcome to the Upside Podcast, powered by Upside Global and hosted by Julian Blinn, founder and CEO of Upside Global. The Upside Podcast is listened to weekly by over 6,000 sports and tech executives from all sports leagues and teams in the United States and around the world. Julian has been developing technologies for professional sports teams for over 10 years and has worked for major tech companies along with sports tech startups. In each episode, Julian interviews global leaders in sports to share knowledge on emerging technology in the sports industry and how these technologies can help improve the performance of individuals and organizations, both on and off the playing field. And now here's your host, Julian Blinn.
So today we have the honor to interview Martin Bouchet, the head of performance at the LOSC, a French soccer team in Ligue 1. So Martin is also the sports performance consultant for various clubs. He also publishes the research papers and books and leads the research efforts at Kitman Labs. He's also the co-founder of Heat Science, a company that provides online classes and podcasts. So Martin, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Julien, and nice for the invitation. Thank you.
No problem. So Martin, what I want to talk to you about today is first we'll talk about your background, and then we'll talk about your role at LOSC, and then we'll cover your philosophy when it comes to injury prevention. And then we'll talk about some of the best tools that you've come across to help reduce injuries. How does it sound?
Yeah, sounds good. It's definitely a complex topic, injuries, but yeah, definitely happy to give you my views on that. Excellent.
Great. So, Martin, just to begin with, could you tell us a brief overview of your background for the audience?
Yes, so I would say to make it short, of course, you know, I kind of started 20 years ago now into this both performance sports science world. Been involved myself as an athlete, but as a failed athlete as often. Never made the elite level. I was playing handball, which is a big sport in France. Yeah. A bit less in the US. It's maybe the fact that I couldn't really make it as an athlete, as a professional player, that I really pushed on the other side and the studies. So we've been through masters, PhDs, and I really, really pushed the science and the research side of the things. And this had led me to different positions around being a conditioning coach for some professional teams. Worked in Qatar at some stage at the academy in Aspire, which was, of course, amazing experience with all the people. Yeah. I managed to meet there, so sports science role there. Then a big role that was kind of the job of my life, I would say, when I was working in Paris Saint-Germain as a head of performance. So really bringing together the experience as a practitioner on the field, as well the science, the research. And after 6 years in Paris, starting more a consultancy side of the approach, working with Lille, as you said in the intro, but also other clubs, and still keeping the research on the side of the job I'm doing with clubs. So really trying to merge always those two worlds, the practitioner world, and using as much as we can data research to inform practice. This is really what I've been doing for, as I said, the last 20 years, and this is what I like.
And you must be really busy, right? With all the things that you're doing and working for the club and doing consultancy. And I think you're based in, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you're based also in Spain, right?
Yes, that just doesn't make things easier. But as you said, they're busy, but I just love what I do. And especially have a comprehensive wife as well, which just makes things easy. But yeah, so we're the family is based in Spain. And then I'm just going back and forth between the different jobs. And as you know, COVID has helped us as well to develop some type of remote work. So I'm trying to do a lot every time as I can without having to be present in the different structure I work with. But let's say for Lille, I'm still there three, four days a week, because there are things you need to be present and then balancing what needs to be done or what can be done remotely. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you mentioned your role at LOSC as the head of performance. What is your day-to-day looks like, you know, for the LOSC, for example? What are the types of, job duties that you have to do?
In a role like mine, I don't have much really operational hands-on job or task. So I'm really relying on my colleagues and all the people from the multidisciplinary team that I'm kind of in the middle of, you know. Yeah. So conditioning coaches, nutritionists, the guy looking after the data as well, and then we have all the physio, the doc, and I'm kind of the only one really doesn't have any proper task on a day. That's why I don't need to be present every single day, but I'm really trying to help everyone, to support everyone in the different jobs, whether it's about just bringing information. So there's a lot around the data, which is a thing that I can do remotely, but also sharing experience, giving direction into the type of work that could be done, the nutrition, supporting, providing. Also, I'm also involved in the staff development, continuous development. Yeah. So I'm trying to help the staff as well in terms of their own growth. So it's pretty transversal role, linked with the guys at the academy to make sure we kind of align a bit the practices between the pros and the academy.
Yeah.
So this is what I like, to be really a bit in the middle, and trying to really to support the players and the staff.
Okay, well, that's great. Looks like a great job, I guess. So next topic I want to discuss with you is what is your philosophy when it comes to injury reduction? And I didn't call it injury prevention. Mm-hmm. Some people argue that there's no injury prevention. You got to call it injury reduction. What's your philosophy when it comes to that?
Yes. Oh, first of all, thanks for making this distinction, because I think it's important. We're just trying to do always our best to reduce the occurrence, but also to reduce the duration of the return to play and so on. And we can maybe also discuss a little bit about that once a player is injured, which is also a big part of our role, as we mentioned, the multidisciplinary team. But yeah, when it comes to injury, all strategies to try to reduce injury incidents, I would say, and as I started, this is probably it is the most complex area of our jobs. You know, everyone knows more or less how to improve strength, how to improve speed. We know more or less what is best to eat after a match and how to best to recover. But when it comes to injury, it's always been complex, and it keeps being complex. There are those studies showing that despite the continuous increase in resources, human, technology, knowledge, there's still more injuries, you know. So maybe just in a nutshell, I may disagree a little bit with some of the stuff that has been said that there are more injuries. In absolute, yes, there are more injuries. But if you look at the pace of the game is faster. Yeah. There's more games. There are more demands.
Yeah.
So relatively, it might not have that much increase. You know, if you take the balance between number of injuries and the occurrence, but how you see the power with the increase in demands. But for sure, they're not going down. So this is a fact. They are not going down, but they are not maybe not as increasing as we thought because of the parallel increase in demands. That's my point. So. Yeah. Now, what's the approach? And I think we are all left to those crystal questions, whatever our roles, head coaches, performance guys like us, or the guys behind their computers trying to do some predictions. So as I said, we know it's complex, but I could start by saying that at least there are some simple things that we could start with, you know? And I like to say that first, for sure, before talking about prevention as a whole, all the typical strategies, exercises, the first injury prevention or reduction tool for sure is proper planning. And sometimes we forget that we're going straight into, let's say, the level two, like I'm going to discuss about those prevention exercises and so on. But first, planning is a key. Because the planning definitely dictates the stress that is put on a body and how a player will respond. And then when the stress is too much, they break. You know, it's pretty simple. Yeah. So all that is around proper planning, whether it is about having progressive increase in load, making sure you have alternance in load, that there's some phases of recovery, that there are some phases of overload and so on. This is, let's say, the basic principle of proper planning. But for various reasons, this is not always done properly given the stressful and sometimes a bit chaotic context of elite sport, you know. So often injuries come because of inappropriate planning. So the more we can prepare, think about planning better, the better. That's the start of our injury reduction strategy. Mm-hmm. And this is where comes often common sense, you know, increasing load. You have not played a full match for a couple of weeks, and suddenly you play three matches in a week. Yeah. I think common sense makes that you're going to be at higher risk because of this sudden increase in load, you know. So there's the common sense. And this is where, as I was saying, I always love to bring the research into that, trying to research trends in what happens in terms of load in relation to injuries. So that's the last bits of research that we've published through my job through Kitman Lab, you know, looking at how periodizing a bit differently the microcycle between matches, whether we give a day of rest or not to the players, where when we give this day of rest and how that translates to on injury occurrences during the weekend, for example. So we kind of found out that often having a day off, a day plus two rather than day plus one, is actually associated with less injuries, because that just allows you first to do a better recovery at day plus one. You also compensate for those who have not played on day plus one, and then everyone can rest, you know. So that's an example where research can assist us into thinking better about the planning side of the things.
Go ahead. Sorry.
And there's more that we can say, you know, about this research and this proper planning. But as I said, that's really to me the first bit of those overall injury reduction strategy.
So for example, I work and I've talked to a bunch of, like, say, NBA teams or NHL teams. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think last week I did a call with a friend of mine who works for the Penguins, and also Marco Nunez used to work for the Lakers. And, you know, they were telling me that it's very rare to have a player that's 100% recovered, especially when you have games, you know, I mean, maybe like three times a week. It's almost impossible. And you know, many times it's due to the lack of sleep, the travel. So when you're talking about the proper planning, there's so many factors that come into play, right? Mm-hmm. Did they get enough sleep, right? Are they fully recovered? I mean, it's very complex, I can imagine, right?
Yes, and that's a nice segue, I would say, to the second aspect of this prevention reduction strategy is once the planning is fixed. So there are things that we control as coaches. You know, are we going to train for half an hour or an hour? Are we adding, you know, like, training content? This is in our hands. And this is where I said we need to do our best at this level at least. But then there's a big part of the planning that we don't control. Game fixtures, travel, this kind of thing. So you don't control. So once you've done, let's say, the least bad you could in terms of planning, then we have to tackle the second aspect of the things, is how we can support players to better cope with these calendar fixtures and demands. Mm-hmm. And this is where comes all, as you just mentioned, the recovery strategies. So looking at their sleep, their nutrition, so they recover better from those games or heavy trainings. And on the other side, supporting them with a lot of what we kind of call the prevention work, you know, we make sure we kind of maintain those players as healthy as we can in terms of looking at their profile, checking their flexibility, their mobility, making sure, you know, that they are functional. There's also there's some research backing that, you know, like muscles, strong muscles are often better resistant to injuries. So there's the strength aspect. How do we improve strength when you only have a couple of days? This window is so short. What are the best contraction strategy? We know we talk a lot about eccentric training, for example, that is efficient and increasing muscle size, muscle strength, these kind of things. Again, there's a lot of things that we do our best as well to support, to make those players move efficiently. So I mentioned the mobility, the flexibility. There's a lot of research now emerging around the importance of the pelvic, these kind of things, to make sure that, again, after a match, players recover their posture, so that they're going to be able to repeat those efforts while diminishing the strain that occurs on their muscle and the joints because of those change in postures or those change in stiffness that happen throughout the game. So all this work has to be done, has to be coordinated, to support players' ability to keep training and playing.
Yeah, but again, that makes sense.
That's level two. That's level two. First, let's fix what we can be fixed on the road, as I said before. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know you do a lot of research, right? You do a lot of research. And I feel like when it comes to female research towards female athletes and a female team, there's not a lot of, not as much research has been done on the men's side, right? Like, for example, I was talking to a company earlier in the week that built a sensor to help female athletes to measure core body temperature, right? And they can basically help to reduce the risk of injury, because when female athletes have the menstrual cycle, they're more prone to injuries. So I was just wondering if most of the research also, they were about men athletes, men teams, or also are you also looking at female athletes, female research as well?
Yeah, well, you're completely right. There's way, way less research done on females. I think there's probably a bit of, how do I explain that? First is there's this bias towards men research. First of all, there's always way more data on men, and its data is easier to access. There's more material to research.
Yeah.
But also, as a researcher, and that's the question we discuss often with colleagues, you know, if as a researcher you're trying to have an impact, you know that researching on male is going to impact more people, because there's more, you know, it's bigger. So this is just a bias after another bias. And then you have this bias because practitioners are male and so on. So this doesn't help to kind of help to develop the women side of the things. But of course, there's way more things that we need to discover. And I'm kind of the culprit as well of having not participated more into this research for male, for the reason I just explained, you know. So I'm not the right person to really give you more details on. I know those stories about the.
With the fact that there's just not enough out there, right?
Yes, definitely.
So, can you talk about some of the best tools that you've come across to help reduce injuries? What are the best techniques or tools that you've come across?
Yes. So again, tools, I think we will all agree that there's never be one tool that will just by almost magic reduce injuries. But I think into the tools, we can maybe integrate both the technology that we can use to monitor accumulation of neuromuscular fatigue, this kind of thing. So there's the technology side. And then if you say that machine learning, this kind of data management is also kind of a tool, yes, for sure. There's a lot we can discuss in this area. And that's probably the third area that I would say that is part of this overall injury reduction strategy, you know? So in terms of technology, we know that what really drives injuries, of course, is tendon and muscle resistance to stress, to load. And when they are, when the load exceeds the tolerance, they break. So anything we can implement on a regular basis to kind of assess players' recovery, readiness, neuromuscular status is, of course, an indirect tool to kind of prevent injuries. Because if we were all able to track, you know, when you were saying that those guys, they know that you're not 100% recovered before playing. But we know that, again, in a lab, it's easy. You know, you have your baseline measure, you do any type of, could be jumps, could be maximal sprint, could be even looking at electric myography activity, maximal contraction, before, immediately after a match, the day after, 2 days after, and you see how kind of the time course, the kinetic of recovery. And then you can say, they're not recovered yet. This is ideal. But in a team sport, elite team sport complex, it's pretty difficult to ask those athletes to repeat and perform those maximal efforts that you would need to really assess their readiness. Okay. So we are constantly looking for ways tools or strategies to assess this neuromuscular fatigue, but without testing properly. And there's a lot of new stuff that is actually useful to kind of have a feel or to infer, to kind of guess how this neuromuscular system is recovered. So all those sensors that you have in the foot, whether it's based on accelerometer, whether it's based on insole, that can give you an idea about muscle stiffness, kind of running economy, which is directly related to freshness, for example, freshness and fatigue. You have now more and more use about more and more tools that can measure electromyographic activity, so the electric response to a muscle. And we know that for a given task, a muscle that is tired is going to need more electric activity to be able to produce the same force. So if we look at the ratio between a force that is produced and how the muscle has produced this force, looking at those ratio, there is some hopes to get into finding new indexes of fatigue. But at the moment, even though in theory we have the concept, it's difficult to implement that and to get the player buying. You know, a lot of people have good ideas, but then to make the players willing to perform those tests are pretty difficult. So I would say, because it's so difficult to have this intervention on players and to test them, the other approach that people are taking, and this is the new fad and new fashion, is around using external data that are registered, that we know that players now, we track them every day with billions of different sensors, or we ask them a lot of things, trying to use those data to create those models. And I was mentioning machine learning, and this is a lot of companies, and I've been involved with Kitman Lab as well into building those strategies, where we don't have much information about the actual player physiology, because we are not making that many measurements, but we have ability to track daily their workload, whether the use of GPSs could be other sensors in the gym. We collect data on their sleep, data on their wellness, these kind of things. And the difficulty of those models is first to make sure we collect enough data to feed the model, so there's enough information that makes sense to give to those models, so that they can start to work and look at those data. So that's really on the practitioner side. Make sure you're collecting enough data for the model to work on something. But then once the model will actually look for trends and say, okay, the risk of injury is increased today because of that, because of the history and so on, we have to make sure that the outputs of those models are actually understandable for a practitioner, that we can make action on the back of those models. You know, if the model is telling you this athlete is a higher risk, but because of, and then it gives you the list of complex balances between an acute and a chronic load, a given metric on an accelerometer that you don't have an action that you can take that you cannot act upon, that makes it very, very difficult. So the tools are there, but at the moment, we are not yet at a stage where we can really say data and artificial intelligence is going to be a no-brainer to help us to reduce injury. We are working toward to it, but there's still a lot of work on both sides of those models, what we input into the model and how we interpret those outputs. But that's where we're going, and that's when I'm investing a lot of time and energy as well.
Okay, yeah, and also one thing I've heard from talking to people in the industry, like the NBA or the NHL last week, was, how do you communicate the information to the coach?
Exactly.
Because the coach may not fully understand what that means. And even if you tell the coach, hey, you know, your star player should not play this weekend, at the end of the day, it's up to the coach to say, look, I think, you know, he's going to play. So that's the other problem too, right? The data might show, look, if he's going to play, he's going to be at a risk of injury. But at the end of the day, it's up to the coach to decide, right?
Yes, it's up to him to decide, but it's also up to us to bring as much information to help those decisions. And I would say there's two levels of information. There is, okay, this is, the risk is X or Y or Z, and you take the decision or not. But hopefully with this information, we are hoping to be able to adapt training so that we can manage load. We can add things or remove things so that at least then the decision is just on the game. But at least training-wise, that should be something way more in our hands as practitioner, is to control training content, format, durations.
So you're going to help minimize the risk of future injuries, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yes, maybe. And if I kind of finish a little bit, like to close the loop, what we just discussed about this overall injury reduction strategy. You know, when we discuss those three levels, so all the stuff around the planning, the programming, these kind of things. Then the second level, the prevention, all the work that is actually meant to help players to better support the load. And then the third level about using tools, technology, and even eventually data and those machine learning and advanced modeling to kind of get an insight into the risk. In my experience, the biggest challenge is to really align those three levels, those three components of the overall injury risk as often. And I'm still to really find an organization, a club where those three parts are really embedded. Because often, of course, there are different people responsible or behind those different levels. And to really have a collaboration between those three people, having or at least someone that kind of oversees the those three levels, is always very difficult to actually find or put that in place in the context of elite football, where you have a lot of change in stuff, whether it's technical, whether it's on the performance side. So there's just so many people involved that sometimes have different experiences, have different views. And that's probably where we definitely still need to progress, make sure that everyone collaborates and that the decisions around the content, the training, the what is offered to players is actually a blend of those three levels. Not only the programming, not only the prevention and then the information from the technology, but everything is really put together. And this is definitely where we all need to progress to work better all together.
Hey, last question. I always ask to ask people, talk practitioners like yourself, what are your maybe top two or three favorite technologies and why? It could be about injury reduction, it could be to improve the sleep, the recovery. Any technologies that comes to mind from your perspective?
I would say
And why? And why?
yes, the most versatile piece of technology is to me a force plate, because you can use it for so many different goals. At the start, a force plate is a lot of people use them for jumps, but you go further than jumping height. You go impulse, the way people land, asymmetries from between legs. But then you can also have a lot of isometric movement. You can go for just endless. So as I said, that's probably the most versatile piece of equipment because you can test explosive, isometric, different types of strength. It's the end of your imagination.
That's great. So look, these were my questions for today, but look, I enjoyed the conversation. Great insights. So thank you very much for your time today.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me and the question, Julia. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To access past episodes and other research, articles, and analysis of sports technology, please visit our website, theupside.us. Subscribe to the Upside newsletter and receive full access to our sports tech business letter and website. Royalty-free music is provided by ibaudio.com. The Upside podcast provides timely insights and interviews with global leaders in sports technology. Until next time, keep looking to the upside.